Hello, everyone. I'm Anna. I'm currently a master's student here at Perimeter, working with Roger Melko, who gave one of the lectures this morning. And yeah, welcome. I'm glad to see you here. Also, hello to people online. Lauren was telling me there's been a lot of online participation, so I hope we can communicate well with you too. And yeah, today I'm here with Joan and Sarah and a bunch of other people sitting in the back from the Quantum Ethics Project. The Quantum Ethics Project, we really think of as a hub for quantum enthusiasts from all kinds of backgrounds, be that in terms of discipline, be it in terms of age, be it in terms of country, to learn about quantum from all different kinds of angles. So we've got people like me and Joan who have a technical background. We're coming from physics. We have people like Sarah, who has more of a linguistics background, is also a certified teacher. We've got some legal people, some more philosophy people, some people working on responsible innovation. And yeah, it's just a great hub to get to know quantum from all kinds of different angles. And so today, we're here for a workshop. I called it Beyond the Bubble, mainly because the original title was a bit too long, I felt. So I downgraded that to a subtitle. We'll be talking about all kinds of aspects of teaching and incorporating ethics into quantum. So a quick outline, quick tour. This is a week about careers in quantum and AI. And certainly a big part of that will be teaching. If you choose this career, then you will have opportunities, loads of them, to teach kids, undergrads, maybe even fellow co-workers about quantum. And so one part of today will just be practical exercises dealing with issues you might encounter in those situations. Other than that, we'll have an overview of ethical considerations in general in quantum, and finally also some more big picture thoughts on how this relates to public good, notions like this. How do we conceptualize that? And finally, I really do hope it's gonna be fun. I had a lot of fun making this presentation. I hope you'll see why. And so to get started, I guess you're all familiar with this. If not, the instructions are at the top. Go to menti.com and enter that code. And let's just gather a few associations that you have, not about what you associate with quantum, but what you think the public associates with quantum. So I'll also head over there. I hope Mentimeter should be up. Looks like it. Okay, so let's see. What do you think that the public currently associates with the word quantum? I'm actually quite curious to see what people think. And I think you should be able to put as many entries as you want. Is this working? Has anyone submitted a entry? You can speak. I can't read thoughts. Great. Okay, it's working. Science, computer, technology. Uh-huh. Magic. Blockchain. Okay. I like that. Hasn't heard about it. Okay, I'd like to challenge that in a moment. What else? Computer, Ant-Man, I like that one. Sci-fi, future, weird, that's also a topic we'll touch on today. What else? Vibration, okay. Something haptical, small for sure. I think that links with Ant-Man. Progress, okay. Time travel, indeed. Complicated, physics. What else? Marvel, okay, people are picking up on Quantumania. Difficult to understand, another theme for today. Competition, also another theme for today. Scientists, energy. Yeah, a lot of interesting stuff. Schrödinger's cat, some common metaphors. Okay, I see where we're kind of thinking along the same lines with some things. I'll maybe make a few comments as we go along over the next 1.5 hours. But yeah, that's just to get us warmed up. let me go back to this slideshow. So what I'm trying to get at right now is the simple fact that the public certainly has some preconception of quantum, right? It's out there in the public mainstream. And that question of what the public image is very relevant to people making research agendas, making national strategies. So here's an example from the UK. The UK has been a big player in quantum. They've been at it for a long time, since roughly 2014. Just 2 months ago, they published a new national strategy for the next 10 years. They'll invest like £2.5 billion over the next 10 years. So they really, really are heavily invested. And this was back in 2017-18. They had a public dialogue report asking the public both what their unprompted associations with the word quantum is, but then also taking them to two labs, giving them a lecture, and then seeing how their concepts evolve and what their emotional response is. But they also did the same exercise that we just did, asking experts, stakeholders, what do you think that the public thinks? And they found something quite interesting, and sorry about the bad quality, it had the same quality in the report. It found that these two things are not exactly the same. So for example, experts thought that the public would think quantum is revolutionary, something really new. But that was actually not a dominant association. People thought, oh, it's, you know, just another type of computer, maybe it builds on stuff we've seen. So that was different. Also, this whole business about spookiness and weirdness, perhaps maybe Einstein's hair, stuff like that, wasn't really something that came up much. So I'm just trying to make the point that A, the public has a preconception, and it might not quite be what you think. Of course, this was back in 2017-18. A lot has happened since then. I also want to point out that they emphasized that the public did, they were basically all familiar with the word quantum, but these associations that are listed here were quite surface level. You know, someone put hasn't heard about it in the word cloud. And while that is not true, people have heard about it. Back then they didn't go much deeper, you know? They had heard it, not more. But now let's fast forward, 2023. Still, let's just get a little warmed up. And what is quantum to the public in 2023? So I thought, you know, to make this fun, let's have a quick look at a recent trailer. I think Joan watched the movie just this weekend. I have not, but the trailer is pretty good. So.
I used to ask myself a lot of questions.
Is that loud enough?
Scott, you're at X-Con. How are you an Avenger? That doesn't make sense. But everywhere I go, people tell me the same thing.
Thank you, Spider-Man!
Okay.
People still need help, Dad. That's why we made this. It's like a satellite for deep space, but quantum.
Wait a minute. You're sending a signal down to the quantum realm. Turn it off.
Now! Something I never told you.
This place. It isn't what you think.
Okay, so I think we get the picture. Pretty cool, this big world down there that we didn't know about. I think in some sense it's quite accurate, right? But yeah, that's just to get us warmed up a little. What really Quantum is in the mainstream right now. And now, how is that relevant to us today? The topic I want to start off with is hype and media really affect dynamics in the classroom. One of our collaborators, Josie Meyer, a PhD student at CU Boulder, she's been looking a lot at this topic. For context, she started off her PhD in physics and quantum, but then switched over to education. She realized she really finds this type of question super interesting. And in a recent paper she published, there was this statement: all six interviewees, they were physics instructors, quantum instructors, spontaneously mentioned media hype as a particularly salient influence on their teaching. And while I was preparing this, Josie really said that word spontaneously is key, because if you don't prompt people and everyone you're interviewing brings this topic up, then it really is a significant finding. So it's definitely something to take into account. I also thought I'd throw in this graph right here just to give us a little, maybe a conceptual tool to talk more precisely about hype. This is the so-called Gartner hype cycle. I will mention it's not a kind of rigorously proven model of how hype works, but I do think it can be quite useful. So it kind of starts off with this technology trigger that sends expectations up, 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 until you reach the peak of inflated expectations, after which you fall down into a trough of disillusionment. That might be kind of AI winter, something like this. And you slowly start to rise back up the slope of enlightenment until you reach the plateau of productivity. So, you know, you might think of those words what you will, but how does that relate to quantum? Well, here I put up, it's quite small, but I'll point out the relevant parts of it. The graph that Gartner published in 2021 for computing infrastructure. So it's this firm that every year puts out an analysis of where different emerging technologies are in the hype cycle. And in 2021, they put quantum computing right at that peak of inflated expectations. I did think that mirrors quite well what I've been experiencing. Also kind of looking forward a little, I certainly have heard the one or other kind of anxious voice whispering quantum winter. So that's just a conceptual tool one might use to talk a little more precisely about where we are when it comes to hype. And now Josie and her collaborators had three main findings. Firstly, student interest in these quantum courses is largely motivated by popular media. So I guess that's a good thing. And then secondly, they heard consistently that even though it gets students' attention, they do observe that hype can also cause distorted perceptions. And that is certainly something that you need to consciously take into account when you are preparing a course. That's kind of where we're going to get to today. And it's also certainly something that last week, while we had these 80 teachers here at Perimeter for the Ontario Teachers Conference, they resonated with this. I asked them, do you experience these distorted perceptions that you need to address? And they definitely agreed with that. And finally, one more finding was that it also specifically affects the content coverage. Again, a conversation I've had with a bunch of people, you know, for grad students, we all end up in the position of having to TA a course, or maybe we get involved on the side with some high school projects. And we've literally had these questions on our mind. Are beautiful algorithms with no practical purpose worth spending class time on? Or is it better to skip them completely to focus on the fundamental quantum mechanics? Or even, are algorithms with little practical use pedagogically necessary to cover so that students can read quantum computing literature with an appropriate level of skepticism? These questions are worth pondering because they highlight fundamental trade-offs that come with teaching hype topics. What comes first, the technology or the physics? The answer will be context dependent, but it's something you need to consciously think about. And before we dive into an exercise, I wanted to point out one more very important finding, namely the least we can do is familiarize ourselves with the recent mainstream and popular science media coverage and critically question whether that coverage is truly grounded in science. And so I had a lot of fun this weekend diving into the mainstream image of quantum right now, and I thought I'd share some of the best parts of that with you right now. So, hot off the press, published just 4 days ago, Michio Kaku's new book, Quantum Supremacy, How the Quantum Computer Revolution Will Change Everything. Who has read a book by Michio Kaku? I'm curious. One person, two people. I remember certainly reading something along the lines of string theory, I think it was, when I was a kid. And I thought it was pretty cool. But yeah, many things to point out here. I mean, there's been a lot of debate around the word supremacy itself, has a lot of baggage. Then if you read the description, an exhilarating tour of humanity's next great technological achievement, which may eventually illuminate the deepest mysteries of science and solve some of humanity's biggest problems like global warming, world hunger, and incurable disease. I didn't know quantum was ready to do that. Or perhaps even stronger, there is not a single problem humanity faces that couldn't be addressed by quantum computing. New book. I'm sure a lot of people are going to read this book. This is the type of stuff that is in people's minds. These are the expectations that are mildly inflated. I mean, a comment I read online pointed out that it says addressed, not solved. So maybe that's a little add-on. But even more with this book, Michio Kaku was just also a few days ago on Joe Rogan's podcast, which you may know, one of the world's most listened to podcasts, the Joe Rogan Experience. And yeah, Michio Kaku was claiming quantum computing can act as a fact checker on ChatGPT. It's also something I didn't know. And just to let you know that he really did say that, let me just show you one quick clip. I hope people online can hear this. Otherwise, we'll share the link.
Computers can act as a fact checker. You can ask a quantum computer to remove all the garbage, remove all the nonsense in these articles, and it'll do that. So, in other words, the hardware may be a check on some of the wild statements made by software.
But the problem with that is, who's the arbiter of the information? Like, who decides what's real and what's not? How does the chatbot decide? Is the chatbot ideologically biased?
The chatbot doesn't. The chatbot simply spits it out.
The quantum computing does.
Yeah, quantum computing can
and
then...
And it's going to be able to discern what's real and what's not real? Even what's propaganda?
And if there are gradations of what is true, like it is partially true or whatever, mm-hmm. it could give you the detailed understanding of what could be misconstrued, what is partially correct, what is misleading but partially correct. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
Right now, the chatbot just splices it together like an editor. That's all it is, an editor, not a fact checker. And spits out cobbled together articles that sound reasonable, but there could be dynamite inside some of these articles that were spliced into what was proposed. With a quantum computer, you can fact check things.
Mm.
And then you can say, this is 90% correct, this is totally wrong, this is sometimes correct, and you get gradations of what is correct and incorrect.
So, I mean, also, if you want to react to anything, feel free, right? I think we're all here to learn and talk today, so feel free to voice of whatever comes to your mind. But yeah, I mean, this podcast, the most popular episodes, like 60 million people listen to Joe Rogan's podcast. You know, maybe it will be a bit less, but this is what people listen to. This is a physics professor saying this. You know, it has quite high credibility in the eyes of many people. So much for context. Also, one final thing. This is a blog I quite like reading. Peter Voigt might be a familiar name to some of you, wrote a very well-known representation theory book, has a great blog called Not Even Wrong. And just a few days ago, he had a post on quantum supremacy from kind of two different angles. On the one hand, there's some stuff going on the intersection of quantum gravity and quantum computing. But then he also commented on Michio Kaku's new book. Not too much, but there was an interesting conversation going on. You know, Peter Shor had some interesting comments. Sabine Hossenfeld had some interesting comments. But I just took out a few of them. So yeah, the danger to the field of quantum computing is from people like Michio Kaku getting huge audience for absurd claims at Joe Rogan. There's already a lot of discussion of a possible coming quantum winter with the hype hitting the wall of the reality of slow progress. Then this second comment, as I said, relates to a different matter. Maldacena, I see a few quantum gravity related people here, so I'll just mention it. He had this proposal around needing an estimated 7,000 logical qubits to do a meaningful quantum computer simulation on something they had previously done Monte Carlo simulations for. And that certainly did not have a huge PR campaign related to it. Just to point out, there was a New Scientist article, no big PR campaign, but there's certainly also a lot to talk about there, you know, with the traversable wormhole Quanta magazine article video. But we don't want to go there right now. So back to Michio Kaku, I thought it was important to highlight some other opinions that were also out there. For example, No Math Random Reader says, honest question about the things Michio Kaku said. How much is fair to expect from a venue like Joe Rogan's podcast? I wouldn't expect accuracy or even factuality of people having casual conversation in a media not famous for high-level talks. My point is, isn't this by itself a proof that these kind of theories will eventually get to the level of were the pyramids built by aliens? The kind of thing that just will not go away because it provides entertainment. There's a lot of people out there like me, people who know nothing about math or physics, but enjoy watching edutainment. I think most of these people know there's something sketchy or at least controversial about string theory, even if they can't quite explain what is the matter. And you know, maybe there's an element of truth to that, but still, it made me kind of sad. And I think the final comment I have here touched on that a little. This part right here. Let me say, as someone who was once on a track to become a physicist, partly due to the influence of popular science, that one problem with Kaku-style hype is it gives people an unrealistic idea of what science is about and what it can do. He paints a picture of a magical, science fictional world where the human intellect and its technology have godlike powers, avoiding the messy details and limiting realities. They're alluring stories for the uninitiated, but when you start to look under the hood, understand the science in more detail, and see that it's not really like Kaku says, it's easy to become disillusioned, to realize that you've been taken in by propaganda, and to lose interest in the field. That's kind of what happened to me anyway. So yeah, these are comments that struck me quite a lot. They also address this idea of depending on where in this hype cycle a technology is, you will have to engage with it differently. Either you'll have to deflate expectations, or if you're currently in that trough, you have to build people back up from being disillusioned. So I think now we're kind of prepared mentally to go into that exercise I wanted us to do. So Josie and her collaborators, they just wrote down a list of questions that you can ask yourself before you start teaching a course or even designing a course. Some of them we've touched on, you know, what media coverage is out there, what preconceptions do my students have, how might these ideas affect their learning, where's the technology right now in the hype cycle, but also what is your goal in teaching this course? Do you want to emphasize the technology and its excitement, or do you want them to appreciate the physics? And finally, one that I also quite liked was this positive twist on things. Can you use these discussions to build skills such as critical thinking? You know, that's also a route you can take. And so get together in a few groups, maybe 3 to 4 people. Joan's already handing out the questions. Also, if it helps you, you can pick a scenario. Here are some examples. Either you're mentoring some high school students for a whole year. You have lots of time. How's that going to affect your decisions? Or scenario B, maybe you only have 2 weeks to teach high school students. Or scenario C, you're teaching an undergrad course. Just different scenarios. If you have something coming up, feel free to do that as well. And yeah, just get together and for the next 10, 15 minutes or so, feel free to discuss. And I think, Lauren, is it working with the breakout rooms or?
So yeah, I can do the breakout rooms right away. I'm trying to post this and I guess I don't have the authority, but I posted the document to Slack. Maybe mm-hmm. you can just say if anyone doesn't get it, you send mm-hmm. their email on Zoom and I'm gonna send them their email.
Okay, I'm just relating some information from Lauren, who's moderating our chat. So if you can't access the document she just sent, then just put your email in the chat or send it to Lauren directly and then she can send it to you. But also, maybe I'll just go back one slide, the information on that piece of paper is pretty much these questions. So just get together in a breakout room, pick your favorite question, pick multiple questions, and discuss them with or without a scenario. And then in a few minutes, we'll get together and kind of summarize what we've learned.
You guys can check
scenario we because we have some, like perimeter on this, so I'm just trying to remove all the people that are not really mm-hmm. I do like three
how many people are there?
22.
Okay.
Maybe 20.
Okay. Yeah, that's
five
great.
Rooms, that's good. Yeah.
Cool. So just brought some post-its so we can write down thoughts a little bit. Just to write down some takeaways.
Is there anything else you need help with? Facilitation?
All good? I was going to give this to the group back there. And just for the end, if you want to write down some thoughts, feel free.
When I was thinking my quantum three,
cool. It's the breakout rooms. Okay. Mm-hmm.
About how it's portraying that, or even like the very first contact we had, he talked about one person has an email from the labs. Like, it's not like,
okay. Yeah, it is quite striking. I was surprised.
And then at the very end, they're like, but actually, none of it's real.
It's a quantum charge cloud. And it's a never talking about it. And I was like, wait, what? Yeah. And that was like literally the end.
I'll just listen a little.
You know, they tell you all this stuff and test you on it. And they're like, but actually, it's not. Yeah. So, sometimes, simplify things from earlier. education. Where students don't quite, they kind of get it by osmosis. They hear about it over the day, but they like don't want it. So maybe
preconception is more. But the also is not necessary that our
prior education
sold source, I guess. So.
It'd be like
Eduardo is a foundation science, so I'm sure he's thought about it a lot more than I have. But interpretations of what quantum mechanics means is like very divisive. A lot of different people have a lot of different ideas. So, you know, maybe he likes to think that it's not a physical collapse. I've been in talks from people from UNM when I was at Los Alamos where they were like trying to model the process of collapse. Not as instantaneous, that is a thing that happens over some small time. And there's like other models where it's like the wave function isn't even anything physical, it just represents your knowledge of your knowledge but like with most philosophy I try to stay away. There's no answer, it's just a bunch of arguments.
That's
exactly what he was saying. Yeah, but at some point it becomes a problem.
Sometimes it can be.
So it's not just movies. It's also.
So yeah, you guys, I feel like that's a good one. Like, you say like crazy things.
For an undergrad student who's taking a quantum mechanics, the media would be like, what we just watched. Like, even in my first year, you know, we would be like learning. Like just the beginnings of like the astrophysics courses, and then people were like, "Well, what about the supermassive black hole that they just found like yesterday or something?" People that really want to talk about those, and like because they were so hyped about that, they were like, "I don't want to learn those boring planet things." So I feel like the hype really. I think that's one of the reasons why sometimes people drop out, because they were like, I just wanted to look at stars. When it gets to like the mechanics, I was like that too. I was like, this is so boring. Especially for like the classical mechanics one. Like, I don't want to learn this.
Yeah, so if we're in scenario C, we're talking about what is my goal in bringing the topic into the classroom. They're directly trying to look at
mechanics.
The topic refers to quantum. Is it to engage with the technology directly or to generate excitement about and appreciation for the underlying physics? They're undergraduates who are trying to learn about quantum computing, and I would say it's the former. You want to give them like some basic sense of the operational details of the technology.
So there's like a disappointment.
I also feel like, because I took like this one in
also
and then the first class, they did something like, oh, what was quantum computing? What do you think quantum computing is? You know, like, oh, it's kind of like accelerate everything so fast.
I was thinking, Laura, do you want to maybe have a look or listen in with the breakout rooms?
Oh, yeah.
Need to make sure that people are kind of full.
Not joining, so I've been moving people around to the more active group,
yeah.
So everyone.
Yeah, no, that's always a good thing to do.
That's
make sure you're not forced into a breakout room with two people who aren't actually participating.
And this is like the first night change after breakout.
And I think lighter output, like you come in with a collection of things that they put under the umbrella of quantum. And even though that stuff isn't scientific, you still have to build a bridge from that to what you're now talking about.
Let that kind of moment of being like, none of that is true, to not become something to keep planning, but something like, because it's kind of like, oh, you know, it's interesting to find out that something's totally different than what you thought, but then if the real thing is boring.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of deflating, so you have to find a way to like bridge that into actually being real
stuff interesting and fun so that you don't lose people when they're like, okay, well, this sucks. This is just a bunch of math. It's not what I thought I was signing up for.
I think that's where people have legitimate criticism of the movies like Ant-Man, because there's just no way I can make my scientifically factual class as entertaining as some fucking squid thing in the quantum realm. Like, that's not... I can't win that fight.
Maybe they're hiding.
So, like, maybe this last question is kind of
like
where
we're
at now. How can you leverage the
I was inspired by such and such class. Or, like, this biography.
Or I would say to get to motivated.
So, anecdotally, I've received something like actually really inspired.
Discussion of something like that's hyped about one.
I think
class.
As humans, we might be able to, like, see it as fiction in, like, a deep way that we don't.
I think going about like myth-busting.
Okay, let's look at what Ant-Man says quantum is, and I'm like, no, it's not. I think if you
think we're really good fiction, is my take.
Yeah, exactly.
I was also going to say, you take that. Joe Rogan clip, and you put,
I
people have this like idea that quantum will, like even that guy's hype is like next level. But stuff that I've heard before him was like quantum computers will speed up everything a computer can do. And so if you start with that premise,
just say like.
So you're claiming that maybe not necessarily
exactly. Yeah, anecdotally.
You can just see anyone that I try to
see.
I mean, of course, it's a restricted group, but still, it's a representative group because they are playing twice.
I think so. Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, I don't want to turn it into like a statistical argument.
No, of course you don't.
I can also kind of. As a human, I was interested in these topics because they're really
interesting. Well, that's kind of how like I got into physics. It was never due to me liking sci-fi. Maybe there's a few people, but I think. Honestly, most people who do get into physics don't come off straight from doing like proper
articles and
like high school. Oh my god, liking it in high
school.
Well, there's some other stuff like that are not
quantum.
Black holes bring people down no matter what. Like they just find it amazing.
Now I get like
not even in a sci-fi.
All about quantum. Yeah, and it's always.
Do you want more time to keep talking? Or?
I think we are a little bit lost on like what we should write.
What is this?
kind of like, I didn't want to restrict. So, like the most interesting thing, perhaps that surprised you, or that you'll actually take away, that you might think about, maybe something you really did not disagree with. You know, like you're saying, people come into physics for other reasons too. Stuff like this, you know.
I don't know if we've had like a long enough conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And then
understand that you could just watch a one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As you wish. You don't have to. Just if you feel like there's something to note down, and you can keep talking for a few minutes if you want. There's no rush.
Constantly aware of like, what am I telling my recommender to send me next?
Now I like it could be. It's gonna be such a like I don't want to start relaying.
Like, just looking at the example, I mean, could we also find examples where it's less hyped or more accurate? It's quite use that as a lesson towards science communication.
Even like
compare the good and the bad.
It's not something I think is done very often. Like
yeah,
like I tried to make a point to tell those high school kids everything
this
is really cool. Like, if you take nothing away from today, it is that quantum computing
like,
doesn't work.
Yeah, itself.
And
to people
so like, and more that seems to be a novelty of information
so
that isn't like
so
standard in the present.
If someone wants to
we're so busy,
know more,
like, okay, I'll
they
tell
can
them position. I'll
check
tell them about, you know,
the
complex coefficient.
For example, with the ISO, what ICT does.
But You like looking at the telescopes and things? You just write it. People who don't know astronomy are really I've never been.
You know, because people who do research here might not have the ability to be able to transmit That's why it's important that we have
He's associated with PI?
I'm not sure.
I mean, he was around. He's been in the building recently, but...
That was because of, there was a meeting. You do something with quantum and it sucks out the truth. That's not even so there were a lot of people in the building. Truth is in the... So we hosted. Well, science communication is something that's important to the mission. We're trying to connect with the one thing I haven't heard us talk about though is okay, so we have this site, but how do we use it to engage, to teach us something, I mean, it got them to the classroom.
So you better make use of it.
If you're just comparing it against another algorithm that scrapes the internet,
But I think I'm just throwing it out there. You know, Drew was talking about how in AI, they actually, we started working on real problems. I've heard that now you can access quantum computers on the cloud.
Yes.
And so maybe that's an exercise to confront them with something that's really cool, but much closer to reality, to see what the limitations are with real projects. I don't know if I had an expert here. You can tell me what some good projects would be.
It's cool to be involved in creating something.
Or if you'll take it a little bit, that could just be
Yeah, and there's a big plus for that too, because actually one argument that people make why, or a justification people give to why quantum companies are interested in putting it on the cloud is that, well, right now you can't really do a lot of useful stuff with it. So you might as well put it out there as a resource for people to learn and play around. You know, like the capabilities we have are not suited to actual applications, so use them as a sandbox for learning, right? Like it's funny, there's a Chinese company, for example, called SpinQ that make like tabletop, I'm trying to remember, I think it's like probably nuclear spin based quantum computers that are literally geared towards education. And on the one hand, people make total fun of it because they're like, you can't do anything with it. But then there's this other argument of, sure, and then embrace that you can't do anything right now and just get people interested with something, as you say, that is a bit more related, right? It's a toy in some way. Yeah, yeah. 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 Just like giving them some connection point where they can see a future. Aha, I've got my foot in the door. Okay, well, I'll ask people to maybe have a few more minutes and then wrap up. So yeah, if you want to just kind of finish up talking, maybe have one or two points to share with the other groups, that would be great. Let's have like two more minutes, let's say. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be really interested to know who's actually in the house.
They're still writing down. It seems like, so I'll let them, because there's no rush. So. Okay, let's have maybe 30 more seconds and start coming back. The breakout rooms are closing, so.
I can talk to someone else.
Okay, let's wrap up. So could one person from every group just kind of share one thought or something like this from your discussions? Who wants to go first? Huh? Oh, maybe. Yeah? I can turn it off and on. Am I back on?
I can start us off. So we picked scenario C, yeah. TAing undergraduates, and essentially talked about how it's important to address hype or preconceptions early. Like maybe in the first class or at the beginning of the course, so that students can connect what they have heard about quantum to what is, and then start to connect to what quantum really is early on. So that if you, because otherwise if you let it go for too long, then students may be disappointed later when they learn kind of halfway through the course that what they thought quantum was isn't what quantum is. So trying mm-hmm. to dispel the hype or the myths that may have formed around quantum as early as possible so that that learning process can be as productive and positive as possible.
Mm-hmm. Cool, okay. Also just making sure, is it?
I think it's good.
Okay. Someone from your group, perhaps?
Sure. We did scenario B, which is about high schoolers. And we didn't exactly come away with a takeaway, but this question came up of how sci-fi and other popular fiction influences people's like decisions to get into physics.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we didn't, like most of our experiences didn't feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
I was also curious what other people thought or experienced,
mm-hmm.
whether people have been like motivated to get into physics by sci-fi.
I mean, I can react to that. I think the reason, maybe not the only reason why I ended up in physics, but certainly the reason why I spontaneously applied to come to Perimeter was certainly Brian Greene documentaries that I then later heard people have various opinions on. But for me, when I was growing up, Brian Greene's documentaries, Elegant Universe, that was definitely a big influence. So that's maybe not sci-fi. Maybe your conversation was more focused on sci-fi. I don't think I was heavily exposed to that, but certainly kind of these popular documentaries, PBS, that did make its way to me. Probably also like Stephen Hawking, like his books with his daughter, stuff like that. That did draw me in for sure. At least at the back of my mind, plus then liking having a formula to calculate, stuff like that. It comes together, yeah. Okay, one more from the group at the back.
So our group was mostly focused on the scenario C, when we required to teach the undergraduate student. And the idea was to focus on hands-on the learning experience and maybe use some gamification. Like for example, level one would be write a hello world in a selected language, right? And the next level would be more and more difficult, and eventually they can create some, even some games on quantum computer, something like tic-tac-toe and so on. So there is no end to these levels, but we can write them down with the first ones, right? Then we decided to focus on comparing hype with reality. So it will teach people critical thinking skills, which will be useful also in always, not only.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's already great. So I really like your point about the games, and kind of to take this in a more positive direction. So this is a short 3-minute film. Quantum Shorts is a great initiative, has been ongoing since 2012. It's organized out of the University at Singapore, the Center for Quantum Technologies. They alternate between science fiction stories and films, and this was the winner of last year's last year's call for submissions. And it is a little sad, so it's a very different vibe, but I hope you'll still enjoy it.
Where have you been?
What?
You haven't been answering your phone. Are you in your flat?
Yeah, I'm at home.
Look, it's Dad. He's been involved in some sort of car accident. Where have you been?
What?
You haven't been answering your phone. Where have you been? Are you in your flat?
Yeah, I'm
He's been
home.
Involved in some sort of car accident. Dad. He's been involved in some sort of car accident. Some sort of car accident. Car accident.
When two particles are entangled, affect one of them and it will affect the other instantaneously, regardless of how far apart they are. I know Dad better than anyone. I know exactly how he would feel.
He had a third cardiac arrest. He responded to resuscitation, but this was the worst type. A PEA arrest. Fluid entered his lungs from the resuscitation, so they think he's more threatened by bacterial infection.
Okay.
You can tell me the truth, Richard. Are you doing okay?
I remember waking up with this really tight pain in my chest. Clawing through my ribcage, like burning. Yeah, like burning.
He's been involved in some sort of car accident. You should book a flight. Do you need me to transfer you some money?
When two particles are entangled, affect one of them and it will affect the other instantaneously, regardless of how far apart they are.
You can tell me the truth, Richard. Are you doing okay?
Dad always knew the perfect thing to say.
Yeah, a very different take on communicating something about quantum. If anyone wants to share any thoughts, feel free. Otherwise, what I really liked about this was that, you know, you can just appeal to very different personalities. I think that's what we've been trying to emphasize, that certain metaphors that get used, they draw in very specific types of people. People who are typically interested in STEM, you know, the weirdness of quantum fascinates a lot of people, but not everyone. And if you just create a lot of different approaches to communicating core concepts, such as this one right here, I think we can really use these emerging degrees in quantum as a big opportunity for wider goals that people have in STEM education.
Is this a point to pause and consider like reactions to the video?
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
I don't know how much I enjoyed it. I don't know, it's a good video,
mm-hmm. But
like a little bit of background is I spent a lot of time when I grew up in hippie towns, like Asheville, North Carolina, or Flagstaff has Sedona next to it, which is a big hippie town. And I feel like the core message of this video is like entanglement is love sort of thing. Like the love between the father and son represents this, an analogy for this connection. And I guess I just don't see a whole, a lot of difference between this particular video and the sorts of stuff that you might hear in a crystal gift shop.
Hmm. I guess it depends on the context in which it is presented, right? And it's a good point. I don't know where people would typically encounter, for example, these videos that get submitted to the contest. But yeah, I felt it just has something very human to it. It's a situation that some people can perhaps really relate to. And even though for sure, you know, it picks up themes like, as you say, maybe crystals and stuff like that, it can draw people in. And then as we heard before, you can use that to take it further, right? Then you can actually dig into what do we actually mean by entanglement. But there's a connection point to a wider audience.
And it's a good point about the context, because I think there are people out there, like Vibrations was in the word cloud, that are taking, you know, things like wave functions, things like entanglement, and really like perverting what they actually mean. But this doesn't necessarily have to be a bad description or a bad way to bring people into conversations about it. It was just that it kind of reminded me of those things. But you know, maybe there's a entanglement is love 2.0 analogy that's actually constructive rather than misleading.
Mm. Cool. Well, thank you for commenting. And yeah, feel free in the break later to share more thoughts. Just since we have 20 minutes left, I'll move on. And so the thing I wanted to do now is just zoom out a little bit from what we've been discussing so far, very focused on a specific topic, hype, media, etc., within the intersection of ethics and quantum. But of course, there are other topics too. So for a brief overview, I'll take the four key issues that Josie and her collaborators identified in another paper they wrote last year. First one, unsurprisingly, cybersecurity, simply because of the dominance of Shor's algorithm in both textbooks and the public perception. Secondly, the one we have covered in depth, right? Rhetoric media coverage, including that question of how we might use it constructively to promote critical thinking. Thirdly, of course, big topic, equity and inclusion in quantum workforce development, especially since the whole idea of workforce development is such a central pillar in all the national strategies that are emerging. That comes with a lot of questions to ask. As with any technological revolution, how do we ensure that the benefits do not just accrue to the largest corporations and wealthiest nations? How do we tackle that? How can we ensure that wealth, jobs, and educational opportunities are equitably distributed? And also, what will happen to these jobs should commercial applications of quantum technology prove unfeasible? The latter question, what if it is unfeasible, came up in another conversation I had with a Brazilian friend. We were coming out of a talk given by one of these organizations that run longer high school programs on quantum computing. And this friend of mine, he's very involved in outreach and education for quantum, but he came out and said, you know how they emphasize that they reach out to a lot of kids in developing countries? Well, what if I now go and teach these Brazilian kids about quantum, get them really excited, and then they go to university and invest all their energy learning about quantum? And then once they go look for a job, it didn't actually pan out. The quantum industry didn't grow. He had qualms about that, and we talked for a little bit, and I do see his point, right? But at the same time, I think we've all learned that if you go and study physics, if you go study something else, you learn a lot of transferable skills. So I do hope that kids that get excited about quantum, they don't end up with no job if we don't exit the trough of disillusionment at all. In any case, there's one more point that I did want to talk about in a little more depth, namely military applications. Along the lines of, do we have a responsibility to advocate for quantum technology to be used for peaceful purposes? And to consider the ethical implications of military funding on their research. So this is something I personally have only recently gotten more interested in. It's not something I thought too much about before. In particular, I was reading this essay by Emma McKay that I found quite striking. She is currently a PhD student at McGill, I believe. Started off also in a technical area in quantum, but then moved towards education, science, tech, and society studies, stuff like this. And she is very critical. You know, she goes so far as to ask the question of, should we be building this stuff at all? Or this quote right here, I want more attention paid to military operations in scientific context to build more organized opposition to it. And, you know, I decided to not read this essay here together because there's a lot to unpack in it. You know, her methodology coming from anti-imperialist studies, the exact methodologies she uses to analyze rhetoric, stuff like this. There's a lot to unpack. It's a longer conversation to have. But something I did want to share was the initial section in her paper about her personal motivations. I thought that was something I don't read that often in papers. So it's just two small paragraphs. I studied, this is Emma McKay writing, I studied quantum information in my undergraduate and master's degrees at the Institute for Quantum Computing in Waterloo, Canada. They came from here. I observed a number of military contracts at my institution, which felt wrong to me. Later, I became a Quaker, a pacifist religion, and became involved in anti-arms trade activism. This is to say that I am personally committed against the proliferation of arms and the activities of imperial militaries. Opposition to imperial war is a part of the history and culture of science. I am taking a position in this tradition, following the work of people like physicist Charles Schwartz, who asked the American Physical Society to oppose the Vietnam War. Hundreds more physicists joined this and related efforts under the banner of Science for the People. This work contributed to the creation of organizations today like the APS Physics Coalition for Nuclear Threat Reduction. This history and my experience, Emma McKay's experience, of course, motivate me to conduct this analysis. I want more attention paid to military operations in scientific context to build more organized opposition to it. I'm publishing this social science-informed work in a quantum-focused venue specifically to reach quantum workers who might resist warfare in quantum science and technology. So that is really a very critical position to take. And as I said, I'm starting to learn more about that. But the point I'm just really trying to get across is that I hope we can talk about it, be aware of the military interests, and have a conscious opinion on how we relate to that. That's all I'm saying. And if you're curious, I'm not sure on time. This is a video that what is it called? The Air Force Research Laboratory has on YouTube about their involvement. We might as well still watch it. It's very short. Also, a warning, it's a lot less fancy than anything we've seen so far today. But just as a bit of context for the fact that there is a lot of support from the military, and this was a video they used a lot at a conference that Emma McKay analyzes in this essay that was fully funded by the AFRL, and used to kind of demonstrate their involvement. So it is a lot less fancy. So that's just briefly sharing what's out there on their YouTube channel. And in the last 10 minutes, I'd like to tie this back to the big picture of what we're talking about today, public engagement. How do these things fit together? And for that, I'd like to draw on the work of another one of our collaborators, Zeki Siskir. He's a PhD student in Karlsruhe, Germany. Once again, a physicist who's gone more into responsible innovation, stuff like that. He recently published a paper on the democratization of quantum technologies. And I thought this was an interesting comment they made at the end of the paper. So what they observed was that in the current quantum technology ecosystem, there are three major obstacles for opening up quantum technology to a wider public engagement process. And these are three narratives. Firstly, quantum technology as an arena for geopolitics. And I'll comment in a moment on what we mean here by geopolitics. Then secondly, this narrative that we've touched on of quantum mechanics being incomprehensible, going back to quotes like famous physicists such as Feynman, that is something they say needs to go. We need to get rid of that narrative to lower the barrier entry. And thirdly, quantum computing as a threat to cyber infrastructure. But now going into a little more depth around this first one, it is a topic that also came up a few weeks ago in a panel discussion we hosted for World Quantum Day, where we were looking at the different national strategies of different countries. And if you look at the US and China in particular, there's no doubt that there is a quantum arms race going on. We have one member of our core team in particular, Rodrigo, based in Harvard, at the intersection of technical quantum machine learning research and again, social society tech, this type of research. He's been really digging into analyzing the rhetoric of the US, the rhetoric of China. And you can really see that dynamic of the US pointing to China investing, China pointing to the US investing, and them justifying the allocation of funds according to those dynamics. So there really is this race going on between, especially US and China, but more globally, national security and technological sovereignty are really a very common way of framing the reason why we should be building quantum technology. And that might sound like a big picture, but it really does have a tangible effect. So Zeki and his collaborators point out that this enables national actors to prioritize certain militarized visions of quantum technology against others, even before they are brought forth to the public arena for discussion. And there are four more detailed aspects in which they say this has an impact. Firstly, diversion of research funds to organizations with security priorities rather than scientific ones. Of course, there's a counter argument to be made. Well, if you want to kind of protect democratic interests, well, then you need to make sure you are up to speed. You need to make sure you're on top of quantum and protecting national security. But the point still holds that you are allocating funds to specific interests. Secondly, also very tangible, the exclusion of students and researchers from certain backgrounds and restriction to collaboration with like-minded governments. Thirdly, they point out that some researchers might be repelled by once they become more and more aware of these interests, and that can have knock-on effects because they might really care about the wider aims that we have in STEM education. And fourthly, this comes again back to our theme of today, reduction in awareness raising and outreach activities, simply because less information will get out of the labs. And so now I'd just like to step back in the last 5 minutes and link this back even more to why we should be doing public engagement, right? In the beginning, we kind of took that as an assumption. We should be doing public engagement, education, outreach. So what are the challenges and the opportunities of doing that, but I want to give a little more perspective on how different people argue why should we be doing public engagement. And this is again a quote from Zicky's recent paper, that one argument people make without explicitly referring to democracy is the term public good. But what is public good? And a lot of people argue that this is determined through processes of reasoning and engagement between science and society. Premature lock-in to certain visions via national narratives limit wider public consultation and engagement, hence limiting the impact of social forces on shaping the trajectory of quantum technology. So for responsible development, increasing public awareness is the absolute minimum that needs to happen. And so what I'd really like to highlight here, that's why I put it in the title, is this word of imagining. That is really a word that comes up so often. If you go read this STS literature, the core idea is really that we have this collective imagination of what we want the future to be. And that imagination is informed by certain values and priorities. And in one sentence, that's why we want to bring the public in, because we don't know what, well, we do know to some extent, but we want everyone to help shape those values that will guide the development of quantum technology. That is how we figure out best what this term of public good means. And that's pretty much the big picture thought that I wanted to end on. One more point here. Why do we want to do it now? This is also really at the heart of the Quantum Ethics Project. This is why Joan even called it Quantum Ethics Project in reference to AI ethics. AI ethics, again, it's something we are learning more about. We're not experts on that, but the way people paint the picture is AI followed this linear model of innovation. First, you had a development of AI technology, and then in a second step, you brought it into society, and then we'll see what the impact is and discuss it. And the opportunity that people argue for is that with quantum, we are right now at a stage where we are developing the technology. So if we start talking about this right now, we can have a different model of innovation, and we can have ethics by design. We can really make sure that, you know, it'll end up as a dual use technology, for example, but we can step, and then once it's dual use, we can try to regulate it retroactively. Sure, we can do that, but there's another avenue that we can harness right now, which is ethics by design, bringing people in to help shape the whole framework, the motives, the priorities that we set in developing this technology. And that's what we want to do, public engagement, education, outreach for. So I'll end on that. I guess we're pretty much on time. So thank you for listening, everyone, and hope we can talk more.